prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival, and I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, January 6th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, gold had a nice day in gold today, and up $16 at $1,094. I guess we can thank the leader of North Korea for today anyway. As he released information as far as his hydrogen bomb test. Of course, there's no proof or no had a verification from anyone that, you know, they actually tested it. But, hey, gold was up and markets were down, so we will take it today, if that's the real reason. Silver was up 4 cents today at 14.10. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the second and third program today. We have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs today. Platinum was down $10 today at $881. Palladium is down $26, almost 5% at $511. Platinum and palladium, the pressure on those, of course, I believe, is the information coming out of China with their weaker economy. And since those are industrial metals, you're going to see pressure on that. Plus, I was also reading an article. Well, remind me, Al, to talk about the auto industry, as we have platinum and palladium are big players in that industry. And we'll talk about maybe it's not doing as well as what they want us to believe it is. The USDX today is down 0.12 at 99.23. Crude oil took a beating today, down over 2.01 at 33.96. We'll be also be talking about that here a little bit later on. And you have the stock market was down 251 points. It was pretty much there all day long, 16,906. The NASDAQ was down 55 points at 48.35. The S&P down 26 at 1990. 10-year yield, 2.18%. Euro 108, a little bit positive with the dollar being down. And European markets and Asian markets were pretty much down about 1%. And we'll talk about other things here in the second break. So let's go to Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. And hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
How's everybody?
What's got for us?
Oh, I thought we'd talk about, yeah, I thought I'd talk about this stubborn respiratory virus that's kind of floating around. that a lot of general practitioners mistake for influenza, but that's not what it is. Usually from time to time, like every 2 years, we see this in the local population where more people come down with what appears to be cold symptoms, and they manifest with a cough and this really hard to get rid of congestion. And, you know, they go to their doctor, but the antibiotics and the over-the-counter medicines that are given to them by pharmacists and doctors don't have any effect at clearing the condition, and it winds up just running its course. So what is this virus? And does it have a name? Well, yes, it does. And general practitioners and urgent care doctors do not check for this particular strain because it does have clinical features that are difficult to distinguish between the flu. And, you know, we all know what the flu symptoms are. And when we get to it in just a little bit, we're going to put those two symptoms side by side, what this virus is compared to the flu, and therefore you'll be able to distinguish the subtle difference. Now, in 2000, Al and Melody, the U.S. National Library of Medicine at the National Institutes for Health published some research on a virus that they called respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV for short. And what they first noticed, this infection in the elderly in nursing homes, and it became a pretty significant problem then. So some physicians and researchers were calling it a non-pandemic flu bug. However, it's not an influenza strain that medicine is used to encountering, and it can mimic the flu symptoms. So the reason general practitioners don't distinguish this virus from the common flu bug is that the viral culture, the antigen detection in this virus, is what they call insensitive. So if they swab your nose, your nasal passages, and do a culture on it, they have very low viral titers that are showing up in the secretion, so that's why they're not distinguishing it. But if you go to an internal medicine doctor, they are better at picking up on this one. So what this really is, Al, Melanie, is a monkey virus, okay? If you know anybody that's struggling with congestion and illness for weeks, it is most assuredly not the common human virus or flu bug. Because in 1956, science discovered and recovered a new respiratory virus from chimpanzees. Now, they originally called it chimpanzees Gorza agent. But a decade later, they renamed it respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. So it got this label because scientists found that the virus infects a large amount of tissue that causes serious infection in the respiratory tract. And they also found that it's a very serious infection to infants and young children and also anyone with weak immune systems. Now, in the 1960s, medicine reported that these infections are as common as pneumonia. But how did a chimp virus infect humans? Well, it is suspected that the virus receptors were manipulated by scientists to create another infection to jump the gap from animal to human. And science knew the virus would be mistaken for influenza or another virus so common to making us sick. They also learned that this virus quickly undermines the health of anyone with cardiopulmonary diseases, the frail elderly, anyone with immune compromise issues like HIV and AIDS, and anyone that actually has recently been given a vaccine or has been on a large course of antibiotics. And there are some similar cousins. It's interesting that the monkey virus has an antigenic characteristic structure. So this RSV virus has what they call an enveloped RNA. It has subgroups that contain genomes and proteins, specifically protein G and F. So this makes it distinguishable from influenza if doctors would check it. Now, it's in the family of viruses called paramyxoviridic viruses, and inside this genus, guess what's inside this virus, Al? Got any guesses?
Well, I'm going to guess that you're coming close to HIV or something like that, at least elements of it. Is that any truth in that guess?
No. Close but no cigar. it has the measles, the mumps, and para-influenza viruses in it. And in your common
in
flu...
It. In yeah. it.
It's an enveloped.
We have a monkey virus that contains three other viruses within the monkey virus?
Yeah, because it's an enveloped
or elements
RNA
of the three other
genome, right. And you have para-influenza viruses in your everyday now flu vaccine that comes to everybody near you. Now, this particular respiratory virus, this RSV, contains three viruses, and it's what is called a non-segmented single-strand negative RNA genome. It has 10 genes, 15,222 nucleotides, and it encodes 11 proteins. So what happens is the infection is launched when the gene protein embeds itself into the host receptor. And medicine knows which receptor needs to be turned on or off for this virus to infect humans. They've isolated that receptor, and it's called the heparin glycosaminic glycine cell receptor. So the human immune system has to launch antibodies against viruses' G and F proteins in order to neutralize it. So if you're taking over-the-counter or prescription antibiotics, that disrupts that process. Now, science also notes that the dynamics of this infection tend to be local rather than national or global, which explains why it comes up only every few years and not every year. Okay, so it doesn't last long, the virus, outside the host. So if you clean your surfaces with detergent, you can actually, reduce your likelihood of picking it up. So clean your surfaces fairly regularly. Use a lot of those wipes if you're pumping gas or using your shopping cart, okay? Now, if you get the virus...
You're talking about if you're handling things that other people have handled, like the gas pump or the handle on your shopping cart, that you can pick up. The last person using his cart had the problem, you can pick it up from them.
Right, you can. It does last a little while on surfaces, but not indefinitely. Now, the contact rate, if you get RSV virus, it is contagious. The incubation is typically 3 to 12 days, but it can also manifest symptoms in just one day. After you contract the virus, you will shed that virus for 1 to 8 days, and it runs its course 21 days. So those with weaker immune systems have it much longer than 4 weeks. And science thinks most of the transmission from this virus is with very close contact with infected individuals when you touch surfaces that are infected. And they say healthy young adults who do get RSV miss an average of 8 to 10 days of work. Okay? There's a higher normal risk of developing pneumonia with this particular virus. However, science really hasn't fully studied the bacterial infection risk when you have RSV. So in other words, if you have RSV, what's your increased risk to things like strep, staph, and pneumonia, okay? And they should, because they've noticed that the risk increases by a minimum of about 30% in most cases. So let's look at your flu symptoms and your RSV symptoms side by side to see what the subtle differences are, okay? Okay, so the signs of RSV are it starts out with nasal congestion and some discharge. Then you get this nagging cough, which sometimes becomes spasmodic in about 97% of the cases, but it typically is non-productive, so your cough doesn't produce much phlegm in about 80 to 100% of the time. You have shortness of breath. You can produce a low fever. And you can always count on a bacterial infection, they said, about 50% of the time. And you get lower respiratory tracts involved, so you could develop wheezing with these symptoms in about 40% of the cases. And then you do run the risk of getting pneumonia with it. Now, the signs of your flu bug, your influenza, are you get a high fever and your skin gets flushed. You have red, watery eyes. You have a headache, sore throat, runny nose. You have a dry cough, but it's definitely not spasmodic, and there's no wheezing with it. Here you have body aches, and you have, a weakness, a general feeling of discomfort, maybe some gastrointestinal issues like nausea and vomiting, and also extreme fatigue. So there are differences, and how you approach getting over it's going to be different. Okay? So
if you catch this, Mm-hmm. Do you develop an immunity where you aren't going to catch it again next year, for example?
If you let the immune system code an antibody for it. In other words, if you don't suppress your immune system with antibiotics and antiviral drugs, okay? Because doctors are throwing Tamiflu at this. They're throwing amoxicillin at this and steroids, and they're still not able to clear it. It typically has to run its course. So my best approach for something like this is to use your immune-boosting herbs to improve the immune system's efficiency at coding and launching the antibodies for it. Don't suppress fever, although you typically won't get one with this particular virus, because your fever is part of your immune system response. And just hydrate, lots of fluids to flush this thing out. And typically stay away from dehydrating cola, caffeine, alcohol, and stuff like that. So they're basically, you want to exercise your immune system muscle with this, and it'll get a workout for sure. And the problem that we're seeing is that if people are going to encounter this and try to get over it naturally, the real problem people face is getting enough rest, because most people, you know, feel the pressure of getting back to work or school. So it's important if you can get as much rest as you can. If you've stored up some personal days, go ahead and take them, because you're going to be out at least 10 days.
Is this potentially lethal?
It can be if you get the secondary bacterial infections, if you know, and this thing's going to get a hold of you. In other words, if you're burning the candle at both ends, you're taking the over-the-counter stuff that's not doing anything. I mean, it just weakens you and wears you down, and you can develop the bacterial infection on top of it. Yeah.
So what you're saying is a secondary infection might be lethal. This monkey virus itself is not necessarily lethal, but it may weaken you to a point where a secondary virus could be.
Yeah, they're noticing about 30% of the cases, although they're not really fully studying this bacterial infection connection, but they have noticed that in 30% of the cases you could get, you know, strep, you know, walking or full-blown pneumonia. And you're also, if you're in a nursing home or hospital environment, you're also more susceptible to staph infection.
Then what you're implying here is the danger is that this monkey, the big danger is that this monkey virus will compromise your immune system.
It can.
And while it might not kill you itself, it may make you more or less able to deal with other threats
that your immune system
might otherwise handle.
Yeah, and the thing is, there's a lot of misinformation coming from the medical community. Your general practitioners and your, you know, urgent care physicians aren't distinguishing between this and the flu. And yeah. People expect to get over the flu in 5 to 7 days, and when they're not, they're getting worse. They start to get really worried, and then they're back to the doctor demanding more drugs, which makes it worse, in my opinion.
Wendy, why don't you give us some contact information?
Sure. Actually, we have a lot of immune-boosting formulas and pandemic kits and some organ cleanses that will help you out, especially cold and flu season, to boost the immune system, make you more resistant. You can visit our website, thepowerherbs.com, or give us a call toll-free at 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. And don't forget to ask about our coupon discount so you can save some money. Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right, Wendy, thank you. It was certainly interesting. It always is. Look forward to talking to you next week. We're going to take a break for some commercials, and we will be back in a moment. That was Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Please stay tuned. Melody and I will be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What shall we do next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to mention, as I did in the beginning of the program, North Korea, they declared yesterday that it had detonated its first hydrogen bomb. And, of course, this was supposedly to the reason why all the world markets went negative. North Korea said that the test had been a complete success, but you really don't know. It's difficult to tell. You know, it could have just been an earthquake. It didn't register very strong. It registered a 5.1 on the seismic device that came about an hour after the detection. So, you know, it'll be weeks or maybe even longer before anybody else has any confirmation whether this is truly what he has done. But he has set off other nuclear devices prior to. He's been working on this since, 2006, 2003, something like that. And but it seems like, you know, he's just a little kid. He's just a little boy. And when no one's paying any attention to him, he has to come out and make some sort of attention to make sure everyone knows that he is still there. However, this is the type of thing that can happen. We talk about that black swan or something coming from left field that you don't think about, and it happens. It could certainly lead up to something more severe than, you know, just a, you know, an announcement saying that they detonated a hydrogen bomb. But this is something that, I mean, the way the world is today, the violence, there's just no stability anywhere in this country. I mean, I look at, you know, Turkey and Russia as being far more closer to some sort of a situation than what North Korea would be at this time. I mean, you have the ISIS with videos declaring, you know, there's going to be all sorts of situations here in the States. I mean, you have the Middle East. I mean, you have the Saudi Arabia and Iran. I mean, these are far more severe situations that I think could escalate much quicker than anything that than detonating a hydrogen bomb in North Korea could bring. And we're a lot closer to a situation arising out of those areas. And then we have our stock market and our economies and so forth. So an interesting world, Al.
Yep, we live in interesting times. You know, I thought I was pretty cool when I was a kid and I had a Gilbert chemistry set.
Yeah.
And I can remember the first thing you do is you look up the formula for gunpowder, which was sulfur, charcoal, and potassium nitrate. And, I mean, it was interesting. You could do your little experiments where you could make things change color according to pH. That was all very nice. But nothing beats making something go bang. And I'm just thinking to myself, here's this guy running North Korea who is essentially just a kid. And it's like having the biggest, coolest Gilbert chemistry set that's ever been invented. You understand? I mean, this guy's sitting there, oh, man, what can we make next? There's a problem here. The kid is a kid, all right? Mm-hmm. I mean, some of this is not just political. Some of this is just, oh, man, was that mm-hmm. cool? You know, would you see that? I don't know. And it's part of the problem we have today. There is so much information available to all of us, any of us. You want to find out how to build a bomb, go up on the Internet. I guarantee there's instructions up there someplace. I mean, I don't doubt there are instructions somewhere on the Internet on how to build monkey viruses that Wendy Wilson was talking about. She said it was man-made. You know, we're getting to a point where you can't even count on these conspiracy theories mm-hmm. being attributed to the government. Might be just some kids working in their garage. A couple of high school sophomores. Oh, they invented a monkey virus. The technology and the information necessary to implement this technology, it's available to those who have enough intelligence to read it and understand it and, you know, a few tools and whatever, and they can do things that would have been inconceivable 50 years ago. It's just almost unimaginable, and now we've got a situation, oh, my gosh, you know. How will we deal with these situations? And I don't have an answer for that. I don't think anyone really does. But it's certainly interesting times.
Yeah, I mean, his best friend is, you know, Dennis Rodman.
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, I mean, what's yeah. interesting in this article that I was reading, and what I found interesting, it was, you know, that he is believed to be in his early 30s. It's as though no one even really knows his age. And I found that kind of strange, but certainly both his father and grandfather were a little
yeah, apparently
out
it
there.
Runs in the family.
Must run in the family, but
if you're not a little eccentric or a little bit crazy, you can't be the premier of North Korea. Mm-hmm. It's in their constitution, Melody. You probably didn't know that, but you got to be crazy to become the fearless
That's
leader.
That's what it is, Al.
Yeah, it's a requirement.
Okay.
There's an article on Brent oil. From the AFP, the European News Agency, Brent oil slips under $35 for the first time since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
London, Brent oil prices tumbled Wednesday below $35 for the first time in 11 and a half years, plagued by abundant oversupply and an ongoing row between key producers, Iran and Saudi Arabia. And this conflict between Iran and Saudi Arabia is dimming prospects for a production cost. Now, we hear reports that the U.S. government asked the Saudis to increase crude oil supplies about 2 years ago. And the purpose, according to these reports, conspiracy theories that probably are valid, we don't know for an absolute fact that they are, but the purpose was to increase the supply of crude oil and thereby damage the Russian economy because the Russian economy is highly dependent on the export of crude oil and natural gas. The Saudis allegedly complied with the U.S. request. Things got out of control, and now everyone who produces crude oil, including the Saudis, are in economic trouble. And what it brings to mind, in my opinion, I'm sitting here and I'm wondering if the conflict between Iran and Saudi Arabia is based in part on Iran trying to sell more, at least whenever it's released and able to do so in the near future, sell more crude oil at cheaper prices in order to damage the Saudis. Just like the Saudis has allegedly increased the supply and cut the crude oil prices to damage Russia. Are we seeing a little bit of what goes around comes around? Iran's going to have to resume oil exports. They have great capacity. They haven't actually resumed. They're still under restriction, according to this article. But still, if Iran has to resume crude oil prices, they have yet to resume crude oil exports. This implies that Iranian crude oil production hasn't yet hit the international markets. If so, once Iran starts selling internationally, the pressure to cut the price of crude will only grow stronger, which means the price of crude, once Iran comes on the market fully and is able to export, price of crude may go even lower, which tells us that the worst has perhaps not yet come to the oil-producing corporations, nations. Prices may be going to fall further. $35 a barrel now, maybe it's going to fall to 30, maybe 25. I've heard people predict 18. I don't believe it's going to go to 18. I'm going to be very surprised if it goes even to 25. But it's not going up in the immediate future unless something extraordinary happens. So, that's cause for celebration for everyone who wants to gas up their car. You can go out and get yourself some gasoline for $2 a gallon or less. Yay! But still, you have to wonder what sort of an adverse impact will that have on your national economy. We've got our entire shale oil industry is in jeopardy. Financial jeopardy. Bonds are probably going to fail. Corporations are going to be declared bankrupt. Can those kinds of problems, can we have them without precipitating more trouble in the economy? Or are they, dominoes that they tip over, something else is going to tip over, and then more, and we'll see what happens. So, again, we are living in interesting times. Here's another one, a couple of headlines on gun control. Headline from the UPI, Trump to Hillary, if guns don't keep you safe, disarm your bodyguards. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump challenged Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton to travel without armed bodyguards to prove that guns don't keep people safe. Hillary said that guns don't keep you safe. This is Trump. If she really believes that, she should demand that her heavily armed bodyguards quickly disarm. As former first lady and presidential candidate, Clinton had the protection of armed Secret Service guards. She also has a long record of favoring gun control, and in October said if elected president, she'd take executive action to curb gun sales, including involving restrictions on people regarded as dangerous. Well, in response to that, is dangerous to who or dangerous to whom? All right, here's another headline in dealing with gun control. This is from Alex Jones. Sale of firearms are booming in the wake of Obama's attempted gun grab. President Obama is the best gun salesman in the U.S. without a shadow of a doubt. As Obama continues with his plan to use executive action to enact gun control measures, Smith & Wesson, one of the largest gun manufacturers in the country, has announced that sales are through the roof. So it appears that Obama's signature achievement during his 7 years in the White House is not Obamacare. Arguably, his signature achievement has been the increased sales of firearms, which may be why he was weeping about it the other day. I mean, that's got to be awfully frustrating for this guy. Every time he talks about gun control, all he does is sell more guns. That's got to be frustrating, right? Maybe that's what he was really crying about.
Or maybe he just has a lot of shares in Smith & Wesson. We talked about this yesterday, how their shares went up. They came back down a little bit today, but we talked about you know, Obama being the best gun salesman yesterday, and Smith & Wesson shares went up considerably yesterday.
Yeah. I know. He might have a deal. I mean, you don't know. In Washington, business is business. It's hard to say. He may advertise against, he may advocate gun control while he's secretly investing in gun manufacturer stocks. He may be the biggest investor in a lot of them. It might be the focus of his fortune. Here's another one, former U.S. attorney. This is from the Washington Examiner. The headline is, former U.S. attorney Clinton could face criminal indictment. Former U.S. attorney thinks Hillary Clinton could face criminal indictment from the FBI within the next 60 days. Joe DeGeneva, a Republican U.S. attorney appointed by President Reagan, said Clinton's biggest problem right now is the open FBI investigation into the contents of her private email. They've reached a critical mass in their investigation, the secretary and all her senior staff. FBI Director James Comey refused to answer questions about when agents will wrap up the months-long probe into whether Clinton and her staff mishandled classified information. Clinton's campaign has maintained that the investigation is not focused on Clinton. Of course not. And is not criminal in nature. I don't think that's... I think Ms. Clinton is fibbing. I think it's pretty apparent that the investigation is focused on Clinton, and it's probably criminal in nature. There's a good chance that there may be an indictment, and that implies criminality. But DeGeneva warned that the decision to charge Clinton personally with a crime lies with Attorney General Loretta Lynch, putting the Obama administration in a difficult political position. How is this difficult? If you find anybody else who in government who is breaking the law in regard to the way they handle their email, what does their political position have to do with this? You find them violating the law, you indict them. You say, I don't know. Can we or can we not indict Hillary? Because, you know, she's connected. Well, again, former agent DeGeneva. He says, I believe that the evidence that the FBI is compiling will be so compelling that unless Loretta Lynch, current attorney general, agrees to the charges, there will be a massive revolt inside the FBI, which she will not be able to survive as an attorney general. It will be like Watergate. It will be unbelievable. So, Interesting potential. Within the next 60 days, if this guy's right, and it might be 90 days or 120 or who knows, Clinton may be indicted, and if she's not, the FBI may riot. The FBI might riot. Again, we are living in interesting times. Let's take a break for some more commercials, and Melody and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663 That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on financial survival. And here's another article, and this is important. It's a lengthy article, but this is important. Richard Fisher was president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas from 2005 to 2015. He quit last year. He is now director of PepsiCo and AT&T, a senior advisor to Barclays and CNBC, and a CNBC contributor.
More money, more money, more money.
Well, the point is the guy's connected and he should know what he's talking about. Now, it doesn't mean he tells the truth, but he should know what he's talking about. And this is a surprising article because it's ultimately critical of the Federal Reserve, of which he was an important member up until last year sometime. And it's hard to know. Reading this closely, I'm wondering if Mr. Fisher is... if he's telling us what the Federal Reserve wants him to tell us, or is he responding in a way as a disgruntled former official, former employee, and saying, I'll fix you guys. Maybe he was forced out. I don't know.
He wouldn't have those positions he had if that was the case.
Well, then he's thinking, and then he's speaking on behalf of the Federal Reserve.
There,
and he's leaking an idea. He's leaking. And he's saying,
speaking
and
on behalf of Wall Street.
Whoever. He's not speaking on behalf of me. I'll guarantee you that. Whoever he's representing, I'm not the guy. Richard Fisher, here's the headline. Richard Fisher, don't blame China for the sell-off. A lot of people have sat back and said, well, the reason we're having the problem in the U.S. stock market in the last couple of days is because China's stock market dropped dramatically in just in the last few days, and that's what precipitated the problem over here. And he said, no, don't blame China. That's not the problem. It says recent volatility and downside slippage in the equity markets has been ascribed to China and the potential slowing of global economic growth. To be sure, these are factors worth watching, but they are hardly newsworthy. While I would not completely poo-poo the effect of the developments in China and the rest of the global economy, I believe another factor is of greater importance in pricing the U.S. stock market going forward. The effect of accommodative Federal Reserve policy. He's saying what he's saying here is, oh, forget about China. They didn't make this happen. The problem we've seen in the last couple of days, the falling stock markets, has been due to the effect of accommodative Federal Reserve policy. He goes on and he says, I spent 10 years as a participant through March of last year, as a participant in the deliberations of the Federal Open Market Committee, setting monetary policy for the United States. The purpose of zero interest rates engineered by the Federal Open Market Committee, together with the massive asset purchases of treasuries and agency securities known as quantitative easing, was to create a wealth effect for the real economy by jump-starting the bond and equity markets. The idea was if we let the people in the stock markets, the bond markets, make enough money, and we create an artificial circumstance where they can earn money if they haven't get money even if they haven't earned it, this was supposed to jumpstart the economy. All right, and he's admitting this. All right, this is a remarkable document because we speculate. We've talked about it for several years on this program, telling people, look, what's going on here is the Fed is moving the economy. They're manipulating the economy. We're not the only ones to talk about it, but we've been doing it for several years. And here comes Richard Fisher, and he says, yeah, that's right. We've been manipulating the economy. And he goes on and he says the impact we had expected for the economy and for the markets was achieved. Bunk. They failed. Zero interest rates hasn't done enough to stimulate the economy. Quantitative easing is failing every place it's been tried. But he goes on and says by February 2009, Federal purchased over $1 trillion in securities. With interest rates throughout the yield curve moving in the direction of eventually resting at the lowest levels in 239 years, the stock market reacted. It bottomed out in the first week of March of 2009 and then rose dramatically through 2014. The additional third round of QE, which had the Fed buying $85 billion per month of securities to ultimately expand its balance sheet to over $4.5 trillion, juiced the markets. This is Mr. Fisher, former president of the Dallas Federal Reserve, is saying we juiced the market, meaning we stimulated them. It's like getting a horse in a horse race and giving it a shot of amphetamine. Make the horse run faster. He goes on, he says, I voted against QE3, but the majority of the committee embraced it. One could argue, as I did, that QE3 and its predecessor rounds front-loaded the equity market. Stated differently, I believe we engineered a version of the wimpy philosophy. We gave stock investors two hamburgers today in exchange for one or none tomorrow. We pulled forward the price reaction function of the markets. That's all a certain amount of gobbledygook. What Fisher is saying is that the Federal Reserve artificially stimulated the stock markets and artificially increased the stock market indices to a greater degree than fundamentals and truth would warrant, which is what we've been telling you for years on this program. These markets are overvalued. They are artificially high, just as gold is artificially low. Fisher goes on to say, if that is a correct assessment, there may well be a payback period of lesser movement in the stock prices. 2015 may have been the beginning of that balancing out. Minus dividends, the Standard & Poor's and every other index experienced minor negative returns last year. If you take out the four stocks, Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Netflix, the NASDAQ composite finished down 0.3% last year. It would not be unreasonable to expect subdued returns this year, given that the stocks are all still richly priced by historic standards. In other words, given that the Federal Reserve's ZERP policy and quantitative easing policy, ZERP being zero interest rate policy, have artificially raised the stock market prices and indices over the past 7 years, it would not be surprising if there was a correction which caused the artificially high stock market prices to fall to a level reflecting fundamentals rather than Federal Reserve manipulation. That's what Fisher's telling us. Mr. Fisher at least implies that the Federal Reserve has run out of tricks to artificially stimulate the economy. Without those artificial tricks, without that amphetamine for the horse isn't going to win the race. We got a horse here that can't run unless you get it drugged. And he's saying, without those economic tricks, there'll be no way to sustain the artificially high stock prices, and they will therefore tend to fall. And this is important because this guy really is connected. He should be cheerleading. And instead he's warning us, we've got a problem here. The Fed can't continue to stimulate the markets which means the markets are going to go back to fundamentals. They're not going to go back to how well the Federal Reserve and the federal government can make markets artificially higher. They're going to fall back to where fundamentals would have them. Mr. Fisher continues. He says we will see what ensues, but one thing to bear in mind is that the Fed is focused on the real economy, looking out to the intermediate term, not necessarily on sustaining the stock market today. That's a certain amount of malarkey. The Federal Reserve is not focused on the real, that is to say, the unmanipulated free market economy. They're out of corn cobs. They don't have the resources to continue to maintain and enrich the stock markets to the extent they did in the past several years. Unable to continue their charade, the Federal Reserve is unable to continue to provide artificial support to the stock markets. Likely result, the markets are about to take a nosedive. And China's financial problems will not be the cause. The cause will be the Federal Reserve's ZERP and QE support for the markets. Their artificial support, their manipulation, their central control. That will be the cause. Why is the Federal Reserve withdrawing its support for the markets? I'd bet that it's because the Fed's balance sheet has jumped by nearly $4 trillion in toxic assets over the past 7 years. The Fed is itself dangerously deep in debt. And as an act of self-preservation, the Fed will not go deeper into debt. The Fed is going to let the markets fall in an attempt to save itself. Fisher concludes. In an effort to revive the economy, and when they were doing heroic things. They were doing noble things. They were doing manly and inspiring things. See, the Fed was there trying to revive the economy by falsely amping up the stock and bond markets. In an effort to revive the economy, the Federal Reserve floated all boats with its hyper-accommodative monetary policy. The real economy has been extensively repaired. Bunk! The real economy that Fisher is referring to, in part, is the free, unmanipulated, includes the free, unmanipulated markets, where prices are based on fundamentals and some semblance of truth. That free market has not been extensively repaired. It's been nearly destroyed. Fisher's comments implicitly distinguish the real economy, based on fundamentals and truth in a free market, from the artificial manipulated economy provided by the Federal Reserve central control, which has been based on lies and idiotic economic policies and theories. And here comes Fisher again. And the easy money in investing has been made, right? That is too true. That easy money was made over the past several years by investors because the Federal Reserve had rigged the game. So long as the Fed continued to manipulate markets and artificially sustain high prices, almost everyone could make easy money in the markets. But now Mr. Fisher is telling us that the Federal Reserve is withdrawing its support from market manipulation and artificially high markets. He's implicitly warning that without that support, the markets are almost certain to fall, and the last 6 years of easy money will be replaced by several more years of easy and spectacular losses. The Fed won't be here to hold the investor's hand and ensure that everybody wins. The trouble is afoot, and those who are wise would do well to come out of here, my people. You understand? This thing's good. Fisher's making an extraordinary admission. You know, we can talk about it on this program, maybe people pay attention, maybe they don't. Fisher talks about it. We've been talking about it for years. Fisher speaks. He's a guy you got to pay attention to. And he continues and he says, now we will see who the truly smart investors are and who merely looked smart by having ridden the rising tide engineered by the Fed. Again, he is admitting that the Fed made the markets go higher. All right, they rigged the game. And if you invested in the game, you could make money. Well, the rigging is done. Now we're back to a free market, and when they turn the roulette wheel and they roll that little ball, there's no magnets to control that the ball is going to land on red 7 or whatever colored 7 is. Now it's going anywhere it wants to go. And that means people that are investing in this market had better know what they're doing. They had better understand fundamentals. Warren Buffett, this is Fisher again, he says, as Warren Buffett has often said, you only learn who's been swimming naked when the tide goes up. Mr. Fisher says, my guess is that going forward, the view will be quite revealing. He's saying the tide is going out. We're going to find out which of us have been skinny dipping in the stock market. By that, I mean, who's been investing without real understanding of or respect for fundamentals? All right? If you've been skinny dipping that way, didn't pay attention to fundamentals, you will soon be exposed by losing your assets. The easy money is about to give way to incredible losses. If Fisher is right, the price of gold is about to jump dramatically. He's telling us that the manipulation is just about over. And if it is, if that's the truth of the situation, that manipulation is not merely manipulation that held the stock market up, it's the manipulation that held the gold market down and silver. And if Fisher is correct, that manipulation is about to end. And a lot of people are going to say, oh my God, the stock markets are going down. But some other people are going to say, yay, price of gold is going back up to where fundamentals would have it in the free market. So what do you think, Melody? Is Mr. Fisher just speculating, or do you think he's telling the truth?
No, I don't think he's speculating, but also I think the easy money is going to be in the gold market.
Yeah.
I mean, here we've had gold suppressed to this level for how long? It's ready to go, and we've been telling you this for how long? People need to pay attention, and you have an opportunity. You have an opportunity to do something before it changes. You know, so why lose 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% before you decide to do something?
Well, that's a question we're going to have to leave and pose again tomorrow because we're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.